They're automatically going to mail you your ballot. You don't have to make a request. You don't have to show up anywhere. You don't have to go online. You'll get it in the mail, and you'll be able to fill it out in the mail and send it in. So you don't have to worry about ordering a ballot.
From the Las Vegas Review-Journal, this is RJ Politics.
Hello, and welcome to RJ Politics, the Las Vegas Review-Journal's weekly political podcast. I'm politics reporter Rory Appleton.
I'm politics and government editor Steve Sebelius.
We're here from our various quarantine zones once again to do a pretty quick podcast. A few major things that we wanted to touch on this week. I guess we'll start with the vote by mail. Let's start with that. So Nevada has finally made it official. Their June 9th primary will be mail ballots only, as you know, a lot of folks probably won't be gathering by then. You know, it just seems like an easier choice. And it's an interesting one because I wonder what the turnout will be. What do you think, Steve?
Well, it's interesting that you should ask about that, because I did a little research to look at primary turnout in general over the last few election cycles dating back to 2000. And my analysis shows I think the highest turnout has ever been was in 2010, and that was 30.12%. So less than a third of people turned out in that primary, and that was the best primary turnout ever. And that's with everything: early voting, in-person voting on election day, and mail. The actual mail turnout has never gotten higher than, I think, 11.8%. That was back when Obama was running for election the first time, 2008. So it reached almost 12% there. But it has not been very good in primaries in general. Now, I you probably agree with me on this. I think it can't help but go up, given that this is going to be pretty much the only way to vote in this next election. If it's your only choice, it's got to go up above 30%, I would think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very, very interesting one and a tough one. Like, coming from a part of California where there's a lot of vote by mail, like where I come from, something like 60% of the ballots that come in are vote by mail. And then I think it went up to 80 this last time around. And it's interesting to see, you know, exactly how it's going to sort of shake out. I would think that, yes, given that 2020 has been such a tumultuous sort of cycle in terms of, you know, all these things going on, you know, in politics world, basically, and then obviously the coronavirus. I mean, I think Trump is very, very much aware, and the Democrats are very, very much aware that, you know, it's going to still be very fresh in people's minds. And you know, it'll be interesting to see if they come out to the primary where they're not necessarily picking for Trump or anything like that. They're coming out to support local candidates. It'll be interesting to see, because I've talked to a few people running for office, challengers, who think that something like a big, you know, kind of catastrophe, a pandemic like what we're currently facing, huge economic uncertainty, it actually it wakes people up a little bit more to the importance of their local representatives. Because you see, like, members of the school board, for example, the choices and the preparation for online learning, or, you know, are they going to close the schools? You know, some schools closed on their own, some schools waited for the governor to close. And so you see, you know, I mean, and obviously the city, you've seen the city of Las Vegas, you know, at least the mayor sort of oppose some of what this, you know, the governor wants to do. And you have all these sort of legislators who are going to have to go to Carson City and fix a state that's going to be ostensibly fractured by whatever, you know, happens here. Obviously, there's a loss of life. There's the concern of illness. But the main thing, obviously, is the closure of the casino. So I wonder if people will have all that fresh in their mind and want to turn out, want to vote by mail. I mean, turn out as in put in an envelope in a box. Yeah. But I wonder if that, or I wonder if, you know, if this thing stretches and we're still sort of, you know, fresh out of quarantine or in our various quarantines, I wonder if people will just say, you know what, I have a lot of other things to do. A primary where I'm not actually picking the president or really anybody. Well, I mean, some folks, but, you know, not the major offices. I don't know. I kind of feel like there might be less people who turn out, and I feel like that's traditionally better for Republicans, but I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, no, the lower the turnout, the better it is, generally speaking, in these things for Republicans. But there's a couple of factors, too, that we have to remember. I mean, we've been doing a year-long series about nonpartisans.
Yeah.
And nonpartisans aren't allowed to vote in partisan primaries. And so other than the judicial races, there's really not a lot. And there's some other nonpartisan races on their school board and a few others. Other than those things, there's really not a lot for nonpartisans to do. So we're talking about, more than 300,000 people in the state of Nevada who really don't have a reason to do it. And even when you get to the partisan races, there's still not a lot. There's a few races that are interesting for either Democrats or Republicans. You've got, for example, I'm just pulling these out of the air. You've got that Republican primary in CD4. Where you've got Jim Marchant, and he's running against Lisa Song Sutton, and that's probably going to drive a little bit of turnout. You have that state Senate race in District 7, where you've got Democrats who are going to want to turn out to decide which of their three nominees are going to be there. But there's not a whole lot driving it when you get there. So no nonpartisans, there's not a lot of excitement going on there. I still think, though, that when, everybody gets this mail ballot, this is literally the most convenient you can make it. I mean, we've talked about the convenience of early voting, where you go to the grocery store, you get your groceries and you vote when you're there, go to the mall, do the same thing. This is literally the most convenient that they could make voting, other than like having Joe Gloria come to your house, sit down in your living room and fill out your ballot for you. This is literally the most convenient thing I think that they can do. So I one person told me he thought turnout was going to be at least 35%, which would be 5% better than it's ever been in a partisan primary in Nevada. I don't know, but I think there is probably some element of that, and I think people will turn out, because you're right, there are going to be different things on your mind. I mean, this is going to be a completely different primary than we've ever had, because we'll just be coming out and maybe still be in this pandemic situation, and people might be saying, listen, whoever we send to Carson City has got a big job, and we got to make sure that those are the right people to handle it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hopeful. I want to believe certainly the convenience is there, yeah. But I think that there's sort of just like a kind of a confluence of things that have always kind of hurt the turnout in these primaries, which is, like you said, they're closed. So only, members of a certain party can vote, in certain races. And then also just, again, the fact that for now in 2020 right now still have the caucus system. So, those, if we'd have been in a primary where you'd also be choosing which Democrat you want for president, then I feel like that might be a further motivating factor that isn't here in Nevada and in other caucus states. Who knows?
You're right about that. If we were choosing a presidential candidate, I think we would have seen that. And also the other thing that we should consider is, you and I are from California. Back in the day when I was in California, there were still paper punch ballots, but you're more recently there from a state where mail ballots are a huge thing.
Yes.
And people are used to it. In Nevada, the highest amount of people, the highest number of actual human beings who have ever cast a ballot by mail, 27,127. And that's in an election where more than 275,000 people turned out. So Nevada is not used to this. It's not used to voting by mail and sending a ballot in the way you send in your credit card bill. So,
yeah.
It's going to be brand new to a lot of people. And I think we should say at one point, we definitely have to address this, because immediately, I don't know if you saw this, but I know I saw this. As soon as it was announced, there were people who took to Twitter and said, you know what? voter fraud. It's going to be fraud.
Yeah.
And all of that. And we should tell
I saw you nipping that and nipping individual Twitter accounts for that.
But there's people who just won't do it. But we should tell people the couple of things. First of all, each envelope is marked with a special barcode. That's a unique barcode that's going to be scanned in and matched to the voter's name when that comes in. In addition, you have to sign the outside of your envelope. Remember, people who are listening, to do this, always sign the outside of that envelope. Otherwise, your ballot is not valid. They're going to match that signature the way they would if you showed up at a regular polling place. If that signature does not match the signature that's on file in the polling book, they will put your ballot aside and they will contact you to try to figure out why your signature doesn't match. So there's at least two things there that prevent voter fraud from going on. And the election officials I have talked to are very confident that voter fraud, which is a vanishingly small problem in general, will afflict the mail election any more than it would an in-person election. So we should set people's minds at ease that that is not going to be a major thing that happens.
Absolutely. And the last election I covered in California, I was in Fresno County in 2018, an off-year primary, and they were one of the pilot counties. I think there were like six or seven in California to test out an all-mail ballot system where every single person gets a mail ballot, whether they used to have to ask for one. And, yeah, you know, everyone gets one no matter what, and you can mail it, you can, you know, turn it in physically at different locations, or you could still, at that time, you could still go in and vote. And, you know, the turnout was higher than it had ever been out of that sort of situation too. It ended up working well. And like you said, there was no issues of voter fraud. There was even, if I remember correctly, there was a recount in a city council race because somebody lost by 3 votes and it turned out legitimate, like a 3-vote. The margin stayed at 3 votes, which was insane, because a lot of times in these counts there are, you know, a few problems that happen, and in a recount you find a few, but it was actually remarkably accurate as well, at least in that election, in that state, in that county, in that city.
Yeah.
So I'm not concerned about election security. I think you're right. That is something that, you know, a certain fraction of people really like to sort of try and trump up, but it is not something that really exists in reality, I don't think.
Yeah. And you mentioned turning in your ballot. We should also note for people, because now for the first time in the state of Nevada, there is same day voter registration. This, you can still do it. There will be at least in every county, at least one actual physical voting center that you can physically go to on election day. And in that case, this is one of the narrow areas where there is voter ID. You have to show your ID and identify yourself, and you can cast a ballot on that day. Once they verify your residency and they verify that you're a legitimate voter, that ballot will be counted. So it is still physically possible to go down, although they are definitely discouraging that because they're going to be wanting to continue social distancing at that point. And so you won't all be able to do that. But if you, for example, if you make a mistake on your ballot, if your ballot is damaged in some way, you can go to one of these centers on primary election day, June 9th, get a new ballot and cast that ballot there, turn in your ballot rather than mail it and all that. The only other downside, and this primarily is a very selfish thing for Rory and myself, is that we political reporters are used to sitting there on election night, getting the results, and telling people in the next day's newspaper, hey, here's who won. Well, that's not going to be possible this time, because those election results are going to be unofficial for up to 10 days after the election. So if you win in a landslide, you don't have anything to worry about. We'll probably be able to tell people on election night who won. But if you don't, if you're in a close race, like Roy just mentioned, 3 votes, well, that result is not going to be final and official for at least 10 days afterwards. So that's a disappointment for the readers who love to open up the next day's paper, the Wednesday paper, and see who won. And it's a disappointment for us in the political reporting field, because we like to be able to tell you who won, and that is not going to be possible this time.
Yeah, and that was absolutely something that bit us really badly as a political reporter in 2018, because we ended up calling a House race that in the general, we ended up calling a House race that was reversed by those late arriving ballots and mail ballots, provisional ballots and stuff too from the day, which is going to be a little bit of a different situation. But California is known for taking a very, very, very long time to process. I noticed just in the caucus how Nevadans get so shaky, at least Nevada reporters, I should say, get very shaky if the results aren't available like an hour after the polls close, whereas I'm used to waiting a month. So yeah. That is something that is going to be – and it's going to be tough. And you know, for a lot of races, that does matter. Like a small school board race or something like that might have a very low turnout where, you know, you're talking about double digits for each candidate or maybe even, you know, a little bit less and stuff. So yeah, I mean, that's a little tricky, but you know, again, I don't see any sort of, you know, there's no real alternative. I mean, this had to be done, and it was either that or move back the primary, because other states have done that too. So, you know, you got to credit the Secretary of State's office for, you know, no, we've got time. We can pull it off and, you know, sticking to when the primaries have traditionally been, because I've seen, you know, some campaigns were a little nervous that they might have, or a little excited that they might have an additional month or so to wait, but it looks like it's going to happen.
It gives hope. It gives hope for those people in the close races, but mm-hmm. every politician I've ever met wants to win big. Although they recognize that whether you win by one or you win by a million, you still win, but it's better to win big than to win small. So I think that's the goal still for all these folks who have to now retool their campaign to work in the fact that people are going to be mailing in their ballots. And also, we should say to people who are listening, normally, as Rory said before, you have to request a mail ballot. This time, you won't. Essentially, what's happened is that every election officer in the state has officially petitioned the Secretary of State in consultation with her office to make every precinct in the state a mail-only precinct. And so as a result of that, they're automatically going to mail you your ballot. You don't have to make a request. You don't have to show up anywhere. You don't have to go online. You'll get it in the mail, and you'll be able to fill it out in the mail and send it in. So you don't have to worry about ordering a ballot. So it'll be, as I said, pretty much the most convenient voting Nevada has ever experienced.
Yeah, and something else that you had touched on there too is if you're not registered, there is still same day registration, or you can go and register. There's lots of months left. You can do it online. That has also never been any easier than it is now. You know, there's plenty of places to do it online. You can do it remotely through the DMV or through the party websites. All have links to it. The Secretary of State's website, it's all right there. So go ahead and do that too. All right. Okay. So I wanted to move along. The other thing we have, sort of the big, huge news that we really couldn't kind of ignore, is the Senate was able to pass, after a little bit of negotiation, not too bad, a unanimous $2 trillion coronavirus stimulus package last night. As I understand it, and you probably know better because you probably talked to Gary today, the House is like kind of looking at it over today, but there's not really a vote expected today, maybe not until tomorrow.
No, the vote is going to be tomorrow. Yeah. The House is looking at what the Senate passed. I mean, I can't see any scenario in which it doesn't pass. I was actually surprised, to be honest with you, that it took the Senate so long to do it, and mm-hmm. that the procedural objections took place as they did, because this is obviously it's a needed bill. The president has indicated he's going to sign it. The negotiations went fairly well. So this is something that I think everybody realized needs to happen. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of dallying on the part of the House. I think they're going to pass it tomorrow. Although there, you know, there's always people who, you know, say, well, this should be different. It should be structured differently. We should have had this. We should have done that. Always room to quibble. I'm looking at a list here that was made compiled by the Tax Foundation that shows basically all the aid available for the coronavirus by state. And Nevada, unfortunately, is got the minimum. We literally have the minimum amount of coronavirus aid, $1.25 billion, same as the states of Delaware and Montana and New Hampshire, Idaho and Wyoming.
So I was going to say, did Wyoming get more money?
Wyoming did not get more money than us. I mean, the state of California, obviously the nation's most populous state, $15.32 billion. Texas, number two most popular, 11.24. But we're down there at the bottom, 1.25 billion. Now, don't get me wrong, we'll take it. We'll take every dollar. But it just shows that when you do these things by population and not necessarily by the individual factors involved in every state's allocation, things can end up maybe not as nice and not as lucrative as you'd like them to be.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why you've seen, I mean, the delegation, at least to me and to political reporters, but also I think fairly publicly as well, have been really, really pushing their colleagues in Congress, Nevada's delegation, I mean, for more help for hospitality, because just hospitality, I believe, is something like $68 billion a year that it brings us. So when you talk about, you know, the $1 billion that we got and versus the tons and tons of money that's being lost, you know, sort of in the economy here with all the hotels and everything and the casinos shut down. But, you know, just reading through real quick, I have sort of like the breakdown in front of me here. So it sounds like everybody would get the $1,200 cash payments to most people if you make less than $7,500. And I think it scales down up until like $90,000 or something like that. And then after that, you don't get anything. And then $500 if you have a kid, which I do. So there we go. We got that started. $500 million for companies, states, local governments, $367 for small businesses. And then I've seen different numbers for hospitals, $150 to $200 billion specifically for hospitals. And the numbers are likely to change a little bit. I did see some stuff that said those stimulus checks. I think that's kind of what a lot of average Americans are kind of looking for, that they might not actually come until May. Like, I guess they're really pushing them to have them out in April, but you might not get any of that money until May. So that'll be an interesting one to see. And yeah, I think you could see, you know, some quibbling with the in the House. It's one of those bills where it was so necessary, and it's been wild to see after so much partisanship the last 2 weeks, like stuff's just getting done and getting passed with little difficulty. But, you know, this one I thought I've gotten press releases from, you know, environmental group, very far left type groups. They don't really like it. They don't like certain things. They think it's too good for big business and corporate bailouts and all that. And then I've seen also gotten stuff from way far right people who say, you know, it incentivizes people to stop working and small business is going to be hurt by that, yada, yada, yada. So to me, just like with a political story, if you know, a chunk of the far right is upset and the chunk of the far left is upset, it's probably a pretty good job, because you're right there in the middle. That's you're probably pretty fair at that point. If you know, if the fringes are unhappy, but it, you know, a huge chunk, and it passed 96-0 or 96-0 unanimous. I think some of those ones who didn't vote are like in quarantine, like Rand Paul or something like that. So it was a pretty clear vote of support for this. So I kind of feel like, yeah, it's probably a pretty solid piece of legislation then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the thing is this, you know, these are unprecedented times. I can't recall a time in America when the industries, other than the airline industry after 9/11, I can't recall a time when the government is telling business to shut down and literally saying you can't go to work, you can't make money. And I think in those circumstances, if you're going to tell business that, you've got to provide some kind of relief. You've got to provide something. If people are waiters at restaurants and you've closed the restaurant, you know, how are they supposed to make money? How are they supposed to live and pay their bills and all of that? I have a friend who has a small business located downtown. You know, he had to close in conjunction with this order. He's very frustrated because the government hasn't offered a lot of clarification, a lot of information on what they can do. He is preparing to make a small business disaster loan. And so it's a lot of uncertainty, but there, I think the Congress had to act. There's no way that you can tell people you can't literally go to work and make a living, without giving them some kind of relief and sooner rather than later. But we hope it comes in April, because a lot of people's bills are due in April and all that. But we'll see how it shakes out, but something had to be done. And I think the Senate realized that, and the objections, you know, Rand Paul made some objections, as he often does with these kind of things, that, government shouldn't be doing that. But look, a lot of the pain and suffering was caused by the government when it issued this order to shut down. And they did it for good reason. There's good reason behind it. But you still have to offer someone relief. It can't be figure it out. They've got to offer some kind of relief. And so I'm glad to see that they did in this case. And we'll keep watching it as it unfolds.
Yeah, it is truly sort of a bizarre time. I mean, there's a little bit of parallels between after September 11th, between the 08 recession, and certainly parallels to like sort of different times where the country's been at war. But it's a different situation in that, you know, the government is ordering you not, like, say, during a wartime to get out and work and help and do all these various things, but to do precisely the opposite, and is in many ways stopping you from doing that. And so it's really got to be sending economists, you know, for a loop, because you just don't know how many of these businesses that I've seen around town. I drove through downtown Summerlin just this last weekend, like on shift, and see all these places closed, and some places that could have stayed open, like that had food, they opted just to stay closed anyway, because it was, you know, that it was not worth it for them to open up. And you just wonder how many of them are not going to open up like ever again, because I had a story over the weekend about some of Nevada's rural newspapers, and, you know, in talking to the press association, that was a concern for other journalists, was just, you know, the newspapers are closed and gone, and that's terrible. But how many other businesses are going to be done after this? Because, you know, you're running on such thin margins a lot of times, especially new businesses, that, you know, something like this is just not survivable.
No, you're absolutely right. And I'm glad you mentioned the newspapers, because a couple of them, I knew people who worked at them. The owner of the Battleborne Media, where several newspapers closed, is a former publisher of the Review Journal. I know him well, having worked with him for many, many years. The Reno News and Review was an alternative in Reno. It was hanging on, and this just was too much. It couldn't endure this kind of thing. Even the Review Journal, where we work, has dramatically cut back on its page count, and it's a much thinner newspaper temporarily, we hope, because of the crisis. Yeah. But it's much thinner than it used to be, and we don't obviously want to spend too much time talking about our business as opposed to others, because everybody who is facing this is facing dire times, and some much more dire than us. Although we are the ones who are in this business to, you know, tell them, hey, here's what's going on, and help them out with respect to, finding out what's happening. And so it's a sad situation for us. It's also a sad situation for many, many other folks across the state, who never anticipated anything like this. And, you know, we've said many times in this podcast how unprecedented it is. And sure enough, it really is. I have never seen anything like it. And we wonder, you know, we wonder, the president is saying, well, let's hope this is over by Easter. And you know what, from his lips to God's ears, I hope that's true. I hope it is over by Easter, but we don't know. We don't know where the end is. From day to day. And so that, I think the uncertainty is one of the worst parts of this whole situation. You know, will there be relief? How much will it be? How will we get through this? When will it end? I think that's the number one thing people want to know. When is this going to be over? We just don't know. We just don't have that answer. And that's a very frustrating and scary thing, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that's really the major thing. As I, you know, said before, talking to folks just like at the grocery store and around, that's the main concern, because we still have people who are going and buying all the rice. And I, if any of you listeners know where to get rice, beans, or tortillas, please, please send me an email, because those are all still gone. There's still that sort of going on. It seems like it's gotten a lot better. Everybody's coming together, but I think it's the uncertainty that's fueling that kind of fearful buying or fearful, you know, behavior in general, and people cashing out all their stocks or getting a bunch of money out of the bank or any number of things like that. I think it's just not knowing. And it seems like what we get typically is an update that, hey, you're doing all right, or we're not doing so good this week, but just so you know, it's going to get worse next week. I feel like we've had that the last like 3-4 weeks. It's going to get worse the next week. And so I think people are kind of waiting for a message that, oh no, it's actually going to get better from now on. This is as bad as it's going to get. And then, yeah. But there has been no such message, and people don't know. I mean, you just don't know. And you know, it certainly is a little concerning. I mean, it's good. It's better to know. As a journalist, it's better to know. But it's also a little concerning when you see countries like Italy and you see, okay, like this is how bad it can get in terms of like just massive loss of life and true quarantines. I mean, we make – you know, I made sort of a bad joke about coming to you from the quarantine zone. But I can leave the house if I need to. I can go grocery shopping. I can do that. But some places there's truly – I saw an article where I don't know if it was in China or if it was somewhere in an East Asian country where the government put an alarm on apartment doors, and somebody would come and check on you during your 14-day quarantine every day from the government, would check your temperature and bring you food. And if you left your house, the alarm would sound, sort of a thing. So it could certainly get a whole lot worse. I hope it never gets that bad, but we'll just see.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. I hope it doesn't get that bad. And hopefully we will resume some level of normalcy after this. We're here in Nevada, we're looking at April 16th. That's the end of the governor's first 30 day order to stay home for Nevada. We're looking at that. Mm-hmm. The president has said Easter. We'll keep our fingers crossed, and hopefully we will get it at that point.
All right. Well, I think that's probably enough for this week. You know, as always, you can find either of us on Twitter at Rory Desphonics and at Steve Zabilius. We have new episodes dropping every Friday. Quarantine or not, you know, rain or shine, you know, we have those new episodes every Friday. So make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And I'm politics reporter Rory Appleton.
And I'm politics and government editor Steve Zabilius.
Thanks so much for listening.